scores! Gilmore scores! With 1:03 left!
Off the glass, it left corner to Aguila. Aguila to the left circle. Passing to Yell, a shot. Save made by all. Aguila's rebound. Another shot. They score! The Flames win it! Yeah, baby!
They score!
And the sea of red erupts!
Flames talk starts now on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Here's Pat Steinberg and Wes Gilbertson.
Okay, happy Friday. It is Friday, July 5th. It's first Friday at the Calgary Stampede, and we welcome you to this hour of Flames Talk. Steinberg, Wes Gilbertson along with you on this Friday, July 5th. Apple, Spotify, Amazon, or wherever you get your podcasts. We're hanging out for the next hour with lots to get to and lots that has happened in the last hour for the Flames as well. Hello, Wes. How are we doing?
I'm good,
buddy.
You
told
how
me to turn
you?
Your volume down, and now you want
it up.
Like
I just like playing with the buttons.
I see how you do it.
Playing with the buttons.
That's a fair point. We got lots to talk about in the next hour. In fact, we're going to engage you over the next hour because it has been a busy week. If you take a look back at Friday, which was 1 week ago today, last Friday, it was round one of the NHL draft where the Flames started what was going to be a really busy week. They drafted two players in the first round, 9th overall, Zane Parekh, and 28th overall, they bring in Matvei Gridin. So that happened. And then Saturday, 8 more players in rounds 2 through 7. 2 days later, free agency, and they end up with 4 signings in free agency. They signed 3 players today, all draft picks, all the entry-level contracts. They signed Parekh, they signed Gridin, and they signed Etienne Morin from last year to their entry-level 3-year deals. So, yeah, it's been a busy week when it comes to the Calgary Flames. So we thought, you know what, this hour on Flames Talk would be a good day to crack open the Flames Talk mailbag. 960-960 on the text line. You got any questions, and we're covering the entire gamut from Oliver Shillington's future to signings to free agency to trades to the draft to what might still be to come. Like, there's a ton that we can get into on the mailbag. So get your questions in. 960-960. Leave your name if you want to get a little credit for what you're asking, and we'll try to get to as many as we possibly can. Get them in now, because as we know, the mailbag always gets jammed up in the back half. So if you got questions, 960-960 on the text line. We're underway this hour on Flames Talk. We'd love to hear from you. What you were down at development camp on Friday morning.
A little bit of excitement down there.
There was
some paperwork.
A couple of first-round picks from this year signed their entry-level deals, and a second-round pick from last year. And you know what? If you're the Flames, just keep the buzz going, right? And keep the good vibes going, because look, it's been a rough 2 years for the organization, but there seems to be some palatable excitement around the organization right now.
Yeah, and you could feel it, you know, from everyone in the organization. You know, this will make sense to you. I'm not sure how many people it'll make sense to, but you know, there's sort of a buzz when something's happening around the rink, right? You might not know exactly, but you and I have had this conversation at the Saddle Dome where you kind of say to each other, does it feel like something's going on here today? Like, does it feel like something's in the works? And today had that feel at development camp. And, you know, what we find out sort of at the end of the day is Zane Parekh and Etienne Morin and Matvei Gridin all head upstairs with Craig Conroy to finish the paperwork on their entry-level contracts. And we're going to hear from Craig Conroy in the second hour, but I really liked the way he summed it up. He said, you know, these are kids that we are really high on it, and so we said, why wait?
Yep.
Right? Like, we're going to talk about Matvei Gridin playing in the Canadian Hockey League this season, and that's basically now official, as signing an entry-level deal makes him ineligible.
Precludes him from going to college.
To skate in the NCAA. We're going to talk about Zane Parekh in all likelihood heading back for another year with the Saginaw Spirit of the Ontario Hockey League, the defending Memorial Cup champions. I think Etienne Morin is a guy who's going to be playing for the Wranglers, but why not get it done? That was Craig Conroy's message today, is like, hey, we like these kids. We want to show them how much faith we have in them, and that made it a pretty exciting day around Winsport.
Well, and I mean, when it comes to Parekh, that guy's always buzzing, so you never have to really worry about that guy not being upbeat and not buzzing. And Etienne's a really, really he's a really energetic guy. Gridin signs his deal, and he's got a lot going on in his and I think it's a little bit more. It's been a little bit more of a holy, what's going on for Gridden, just because he's had all these things to figure out. But yeah, that is an exciting day, and I'm glad they were able to get it done, because right now they are trying to start a real positive ball rolling downhill, and they are trying to get themselves to a spot where all this pays off in 3, 4, 5 years.
Yeah, and it's not just positive on the outside. It's not just, you know, we want Flames fans to feel good about where we're going. We want some good news for our fan base to wrap its arms around. It's also, and I'm sure you're picking up on this, in every conversation, it's more and more and more about guys who are going to want to be in Calgary.
Yeah.
We want players who want to be part of this. And the fact that 1 week after being drafted, Zane Parekh and Matvei Gridden said, yeah, hey, show me where to sign.
Yeah,
I'm in. I want to be part of this. You know, Matvei said to me, I want to be in the NHL in a couple of years. This is where I want to be. And so,
well, it's funny you bring that up, because even when he was drafted in the first round last Friday night, there were a lot of people saying, why are they going the college route? Like, we don't want them to do this. We're tired of getting burned by guys going to college,
right,
and not signing. Well, now you don't have to worry about that. A, he's not going to college, but B, he signed exactly 1 week after being drafted by the team.
Yeah. Yeah, so no concerns there, and I'm sure we'll get a little bit more into it later, but Étienne Morin is a guy who's really interesting to me. Here's a second-round pick from last year, but because of the influx of talent on blue line prospects, we talk about the trade for Hunter Brustevich, we talk about the draft of Zane Parekh and Henry Muse to a lesser extent. It feels like we've kind of forgotten about Morin,
yeah,
and I'm really fascinated by him, because I think a lot of people would tell you that at this point, and he's still, I believe, only 19 years old, at this point, he might be their most well-rounded defensive prospect. He doesn't have the high-end upside points-wise that Parekh and Brustevich are going to have.
Yeah.
He's probably not going to be a pure shutdown guy like Artem Grushnikov, but they feel like his game is really well-balanced. And I am curious. It's going to take a while. I always, you know, throw that out there, especially with defensemen. But
yeah,
I'm curious to see what that first season for him with the Wranglers looks like, because I think while we don't talk about him enough, there's still a ton of excitement around the Saddle Dome about him.
So that's a good way to bring us into the mailbag. Get your questions in, 960-960 on the text line. We'll get to as many as we can this hour. If you're listening live, you get them in now so that we're not having to rapid fire them later on. And that it's up to you. We'll get to as many as we can a little bit later on.
If you get one in now, you could ask another one later.
That could be potential. Just change your name.
Do we allow that?
Probably.
You got to change your name.
Leave your name if you want to get a little credit for the question. But start with this from Neil in the Northeast. Says, bring Gio in at league minimum. Who better to be an ambassador for the city to the new crop of young D-men? As a former captain of the team and Norris Trophy winner, he's the guy for the job, and it could lead to a transition into management, which is where he belongs. We talked a little bit about this, I think it was on Thursday's show, talked a little bit about the potential of the Flames signing a guy like Mark Giordano, who is an unrestricted free agent and does not have a home as of right now. Look, from a story standpoint, from a feel-good standpoint, all that type of stuff, you're not going to have any disagreement, I think, from you or I. From a hockey standpoint, from a fit standpoint, I don't know if I see it the same way that perhaps Neil does. I think you made the point yesterday. Well, I know you made the point because it wasn't me. You made the point yesterday that, you know, that
way to rule it out, by the way.
I'm all about process of elimination.
Yeah.
I think throws a little bit of a complicated wrench into the current leadership group, especially Michael Backlund, who has only had the 1 year as captain of the team under his belt. They went out, they got Jake Bean. I just feel with the way this team is going, I don't know if the hockey fit makes as much sense to me as it does potentially to Neil.
Yeah, I agree with you. The leadership portion is certainly a concern of mine, and not because of what I think of Mark Giordano as a person or what I know Michael Backlund thinks of Mark Giordano as a person. I just think, you know, when the old captain is suddenly sitting in the locker room again, it can raise some, well, who's calling the shots around here? Who is the captain? And I think, and every time we talk to Ryan Huska about what he was proud of in his first season as a head coach, one of the first things he brings up is the sort of evolution of the leadership group, and that he thinks that they really have the foundation of leadership that they're going to need through this process. And so for that reason, I'd be hesitant if I was Craig Conroy to bring back Mark Giordano. And then with that hesitation already, I just don't know at 40 years old where he's upgrading your blue line. You know, I'd rather, and listen, I got a ton of respect for Mark Giordano and what a great career he's had, and the sort of, you know, unknown to Norris Trophy story that we all know he is. But, you know, at this point in time, I might rather see what Ilya Solovyov is as a third-pairing defenseman.
Well, and I mean, it just is – I think it's a great feel-good story. We'd love to have Gio back. We all love Gio. I just don't know from a hockey standpoint if it makes sense with the way the Flames are going.
Yeah.
Because that would be one that potentially blocks, whether it's a Braden Pahal or a Jeremy Poirier,
right,
or another guy who might be knocking on the door to get some time and to get some more elevated time. It just it doesn't make as much, even for a guy like Miramanov, who is still developing as an NHL defenseman. It to me feels like it might put an unnecessary. And look, you'd have no problem. The Maple Leafs healthy scratch Mark Giordano last year. Story, yes. Fit, not so much. And I feel bad saying that.
Yeah.
Because I do have so much respect for the guy. But just where the Flames are,
yeah,
I think that's fair to say.
Yeah, listen, we're not poo-pooing the suggestion from Neil, because there's a lot of fans, I think, in the city that would love to see number five back in a Flames uniform. But as you balance the numbers and the youth on your blue line, I don't see it.
Okay, this one comes from Morgan. Morgan's got two. Morgan and Cochran says, afternoon, fellas.
Good town.
It is a good town. In your opinion, are Kadri and Coleman both on the opening night roster? And do you have a hypothetical trade for the use of weaponizing cap space? So we'll do the second one second.
Okay.
Funny enough, we'll go in the order that he asked them. Coleman and Kadri, do you see them both on the opening night roster come October? My answer is yes. Yes, I do.
Yeah, myself as well. And I know there was another question that came in saying, you know, well, what do you think the plan is with Nazem Kadri? And what I think the plan is Nazem Kadri is your best center, and I would say your best player, period. And if somebody wants him, they can try to blow you away with a deal. But if you think, and when I say you, I'm referring to rival general managers, like if other GMs are thinking that, you know, they'll get Kadri out of Calgary and the Flames will eat a bunch of salary just to send him out the door, that's not the case with,
yeah,
Nazem Kadri. And I don't believe that's the case with Blake Coleman either. You know, we've heard Craig Conroy as recently as this week talk about the importance of having some veterans in the lineup, those guys who are going to send that message both through words and the way they play that losing is not acceptable.
Yeah.
And listen, internally, I think this organization understands there's going to be a lot of losses this year. They're just not willing to say, yeah, this is fine. Right, we've heard Craig Conroy reiterate over and over and over the importance of not kind of slipping into that losing mentality. And those two guys that Morgan asked about in Kadri and Coleman are perhaps two of the most, if not,
yep,
the two most important in that regard.
I'm with you on that front. You know, do I think that Blake Coleman could be a good trade deadline chip for the Flames this year or next year? Yeah, I do. And I think Blake is a very, very competitive guy. And I think that, you know, at some point there's a very good chance that I'll be like, damn, I want to win. I want to go somewhere. Look, he's over 30 years old, and he's a guy who understands that the NHL lifespans are finite. So I don't know if it's a guarantee that Blake finishes out his time in a 6-year contract as a member of the Flames for those reasons, but I do think both he and Kadri are back. Look, if there's a team, to your point, that comes to the Flames, if there's a Colorado, if there's a Toronto, if there's a team that's like, hey, we really want Kadri, and you need to eat salary to make it work, we're willing to make it worth your while, then yes, have those conversations.
Sure.
But I don't think you have no reason, if you're the Flames, claims to be actively trying to move these guys.
No.
Again, if Nazem comes to them and says, I want out, well, then, yeah, you try to facilitate that. We know how that goes. To our knowledge, neither Blake Coleman nor Nazem Kadri have done that. So if that happens and we start hearing rumblings of that, then the paradigm changes a little bit. But for now, yeah, I think they're on the opening night roster for sure. As for the second part of that question, I do have a hypothetical for what
I was. I'm glad one of us does. What do you got?
I'm just going to go surf over here to Cap Friendly. Oof. That's
Puckpedia. Is that your new go-to?
I think that is going to have to be. I know they're doing some work over at Puckpedia to try to make it even
and they
more
do a good job already.
Friendly.
Yeah.
Well, and the guy who runs Puckpedia has got some really good contacts with agents and stuff like that. So I do think Puckpedia is going to be your new go-to. My answer is Jesperi Kotkaniemi in Carolina.
Okay.
Now there's still a lot left on that contract, so that is important to point out. But you know what, if you're the Flames, I believe there's 6 years left on Kotkaniemi's contract, and he's at $4.85 million. Mm-hmm. He's under 25 years old. He's a natural center who can play the wing. Where do they need help? Down the middle. I know Kotkaniemi has not been the fit that Carolina was looking for when then-GM Don Waddell signed him to that offer sheet a few years ago. It has not worked out the way Carolina was hoping it would work out, but that's okay. You know, $4.85 million, I think for a guy that can get you 40 to 50 points is just fine, and there might still be more there. The Flames have the opportunity to try to get more from him, give him more opportunity, and that takes a good chunk, almost six times five, almost $30 million off your cap going forward. I think that it would help the Hurricanes too, and I think Carolina is looking for more cap space going forward here too.
Yeah, no, that's a good potential idea that you've come up with for sure. I mean, I haven't had a chance to go through and really try to figure it out. I don't want to just be the guy who jumps on the radio and says, what are the Leafs doing with David Kampf? Go trade for him. Like, I think there's a lot better fits than the real obvious salary dumps that you bring up, and Kotkaniemi is a guy that can fit that description.
And he's at 4.8, he's at 4.82,
yeah.
Not 4.85, but 4.82 million is his cap hit going forward.
Yeah, and it's going to be really interesting, right? New front office there in Carolina, and so that, you know, and I just threw one out as not something I'm suggesting, just you can go look at a team that's cap strapped and then pick your player that they're probably not going to have a ton of use for. A guy like Kotkaniemi can be more useful in Calgary than that.
And he is 23 years old, albeit turns 24 on Saturday. So July 6th is his birthday. So he's 24 years old, but for all intents and purposes. But we're talking about a 24-year-old who's put up decent numbers before. You'd be helping Carolina with a contract that is somewhat cumbersome for a cup contender, for a guy that is not playing more than third, fourth line minutes on that team because they're a pretty stacked team. Well, the Flames have got more openings when it comes to center ice, and especially going forward. I mean, going back to Morgan's first question, what if they trade a guy like Nazem Kadri? Well, then there's another opening at center ice. So
yeah.
I think that's the type of deal that Craig Conroy and the Flames will be and should be open to as they move through the next few years here.
And Craig Conroy would be the first to admit that he hasn't been able to address the question mark at center to the point that he hoped to by now, right?
Yep.
You know, I know that they would have been fishing around in free agency and in the trade market on centers, and it's yet to come to fruition. And so someone who can play center becomes a real obvious option there.
It is our Flames Talk mailbag. Get your questions in. 960-960 is Pat and Wes this hour on Flames Talk. This reads from Justin in Calgary. How many years will it take before the Flames are a Stanley Cup contender? I'll pair it with Cliffs, who says, what is the most likely timeline for the Flames being good again? I hear people say they should be not good for 3 years, but be good in 3 years when the new building opens. Well, I can tell you that the timeline that publicly General Manager Craig Conroy's talked about is 3 to 5 years. He said, you know, this is a 3 to 5 year plan. The new building opens in approximately 3 years. They're supposed to break ground downtown, or just to the east of downtown, sometime in August, we think, is when they'll officially break ground.
It's a little busy down there right now.
It may be a little bit busy. Did you hear that? Like, it feels like it's pretty clear that it's happening. Cowboys is not going to be there with their Stampede tent starting next year. They had to move, so the building's going to go up. But I think 3 to 5 years. I think 3 years to be legitimately competitive again and be in a spot where, you know, they could be playing meaningful games, like really meaningful games in late March and into April. And then once you get to year 1, 2, 3 inside the new building, then that's what I think 5 years for them being a higher end contender seems like a realistic ballpark.
Yeah.
And then 3 years and to be a, you know, a team that can make some noise, at least in the regular season, when things open for the new building.
Yeah, you know what? I'll put it this way. I think if the Flames are not ready to push seriously for a playoff spot in 3 years, then the plan hasn't unfolded the way that they hoped it would. The young players haven't matured at the pace they hoped they would, etc. Does that mean for sure that I think they're a playoff team in 3 years? I don't know if I'm ready to say that, but I think they absolutely have to be in that mix. They have to be pushing hard for a playoff spot in 3 seasons.
This comes from Cole in Red Deer. It does give us an opportunity to talk about this player. It says, where do you place the likelihood of an announcement coming this weekend that Oliver Shillington is now represented by Dan Milstein and, oh, by the way, has a one-year contract with the Flames? That comes from Cole in Red Deer. Well, I believe there's an announcement coming. Dan Milstein has gone from being assistant general manager of the Vancouver Canucks and is now the AGM of the Calgary Flames. Milstein, of course, represents he's the head of Gold Star, who represents a number of members of the Flames, including their first-round picks this year.
Yep.
Devin Cooley, Yegor Sharangovich, Andre Kuzmenko, Martin Pospisil, Dan Vladar, like a lot of guys on the Flames represented by Milstein.
Yeah, he's done a little bit of paperwork with the Flames recently, including two today.
Yeah, two today.
And if there was any question, I'm glad you brought up Zadorov, because if there was any question that stunt, if we could maybe call it that, was going to sour the relationship between the agent and the Flames, and it certainly could have. It certainly could have strained it for a while. That doesn't seem to be a concern.
On the Shillington front, though, I think that's a really interesting topic.
Yeah, this is a weird one, isn't it, buddy?
And Brad and Nanton asked something similar. What's the likelihood Shillington gets more than a one-year deal elsewhere? If not, does he circle back to the Flames after rejecting them? And if so, do you think Conroy gives him the same deal? Well, I do think that the door remains open, that Calgary's deal that they had on the table or have had on the table for Oliver Shillington, I think it's still exists, and I think that if the Shillington camp were to come back and say, hey, we're willing to do this, then the Flames would be okay doing that. Where I don't know if it's going to happen is if the Flames are going to give in on any of the leverage that the Shillington camp was trying to push before. That's where I think that there may be a little bit of the heels dug in a little bit.
Yeah, I just wonder if we've got to the point, and I certainly didn't expect 5 days into the free agent period that Oliver Shillington would remain unsigned. And while I certainly think that the door does remain open for Oliver Shillington to accept the offer from the Flames that's been on the table, while I sort of wonder if that's the reason that the Flames haven't added another defenseman in free agency yet, I just wonder at what point hurt feelings start to kind of get involved. I wonder why, if Oliver Shillington hasn't gotten the offers that his agent was anticipating on the open market, he hasn't circled back yet. And I wonder if Oliver, for whatever reason, is left feeling less wanted or slightly insulted by whatever the Flames offer was. I wonder if the Flames have kind of said, geez, if you'd rather look around for a week than circle back to us, then you know what? Best of luck. I think it's time for us to go our separate ways. And I'm not saying that I'm certain we're at that point, but I just wonder how close we are to this, this being finalized. Because, and when I say finalized, just because I feel like both sides have really dug in on this one.
It does.
And that being said, I don't think the Flames should change their offer. It's pretty clear that whatever Oliver's representative thought was out there has not materialized.
I do wonder how much this has been an overplaying of the hand. I do wonder that a little bit. Look, J.P. Barry is the representation and has been handling this one. Like, J.P.'s got a lot of associates underneath him as part of his agency, but J.P.'s been handling this one on his own. And it is a little surprising that they may have overplayed the hand the way that they have. It felt like the Shillington camp believed that they had a deal out there. It felt like they thought that they had something that they were going to be able to sign, and maybe it didn't come to fruition. Yeah. I don't know, but this one, it remains a very strange one when it comes to how this is playing itself out, and the fact that, as you mentioned, day five into free agency, still no Shillington contract.
Yeah, when it was confirmed that Oliver would go to July 1 without signing an extension at the Saddle Dome, I just assumed there was something out there for him. I expected him to be one of those names that came off the free agent board in the first couple of hours. And so I am really surprised that we're at this point. And, I think so highly of both Oliver's skill set and his perseverance through what he's been through. Like, I'd still love to see him back in a Flames jersey. It's starting to feel like a really long, long shot to me.
Yeah, it's longer of a shot every day we go by.
Yeah, it should, I think, buddy, feel the other way. Like, it should feel like, okay, well, you know, if Oliver's not finding that deal that he thought was out there, that
why aren't they coming back?
Why isn't he coming back? And I guess the reason it feels like more of a long shot to me is because I can't wrap my head around why they haven't circled back yet.
Yep. Get your questions in. Flames Talk Mailbag for the rest of the hour at 960-960 at Steinberg and Wes Gilbertson along with you. And as always, you can get Flames Talk on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, or wherever you get your podcasts.
You're locked on Flames Talk, only on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Friday. Continuing along on our Flames Talk Mailbag, 960-960 on the text line. Steinberg and Wes Gilbertson along with you on your Stampede First Friday. We got lots of questions still to get to, and keep them coming for the rest of the hour at 960-960. I think this question was made for Wes Gilbertson. Mark on Crowchild says, guys, who do you think has the best chance of being a third line center? I'd suggest that Martin Pospisil, if he gets his act together, has got the size to do it. Not too sure about Zeri. He's too small, and Yegor is better as a winger on one of the top two lines. That comes from Mark. As the roster sits right now, because my answer is yes, Barry Kokaniemi. That's who I answer is.
Yeah.
Going back to an earlier question. No, as the roster is currently constituted, who is the best bet for a third line center on this team behind Kadri and behind Backlund?
Well, I think Mark sort of hinted at what my answer will likely be, and that's Martin Pospisil. And I know there's some concern about limiting his effectiveness on the forecheck, and I think those concerns are justified. I think here you already recapped them, but I'll go through them again. Here's your three options, right? You got Connor Zeri. And when I say options, these are your three in-house options, unless you really think Cole Schwintz is ready to grow into that role, and I don't believe they think that. So you've got Connor Zeri, you got Martin Pospisil, and you have Yegor Sharangovich. And I think in each case, you stand to lose something. If you move Martin Pospisil to the center of the ice, you stand to lose some of his effectiveness on the forecheck.
Yep.
Because of the responsibilities of the center, he's not going to get as many licks in. And I've said on this show before, and I'll say it again now, I don't actually think that's a horrible thing. I also think it might cut down on the penalties a little bit. But you potentially lose some of that snarl and speed from the wing if you move Pospisil. If you move Yegor Sharangovich, you're taking one of your best shooters, maybe your best shooter, and you're sort of neutralizing his shot a little bit. We saw when Yegor Sharangovich played center for the second half of the season, we saw him find it a lot more difficult to get that shot off from the inside, right?
Yep.
It was not nearly the weapon that it was in the first half of the season. Did he get better at finding spots? I think so, but, you know, you stand to lose something there as well. And I think what you stand to lose if you move Connor Zeri to center is the sort of attacking mentality that has made him a really good winger.
I liked him, albeit in about six games. I liked him as a center iceman last year. And they were meaningless games in terms of the standings. There wasn't a whole lot on offer, but I still thought that he played well. Now, there were a couple of nights where I thought he was over his head. When he was up against that guy in Edmonton and he saw a lot of 97 that night, I thought that he struggled a little bit. But that's all part of the learning process. I had no problem. I didn't come away from Connor Zeri's first head-to-head as a center iceman against McDavid and say to myself, oh, well, you know what, that's it for Zeri. Lots of seasoned NHL centers are fed their lunch by Connor McDavid. So I still think there's a lot there in terms of what Zeri can be at center. So my answer is Zeri.
I
think that there's a lot of offense that comes along with his game even at center.
Sure.
And honestly, and this is not a knock on Jonathan Huberdeau at all, but if Zeri, Huberdeau, and Sharon Govich is your, I don't even want to call it a third line, but if they're your kind of one of your three top forward lines, but the one given the most offensive high ground and given the mat, like we know Michael Backlund can take on tough matchups. Nazem Kadri has shown that doesn't matter who he goes up against, he can win the day. So if you have a Kadri line and a Backlund line taking on tougher matchups, it frees up Zeri, Huberdeau, Sharon Govich, something like that.
Yeah.
Zeri, Huberdeau, Mantha, whatever the case may be, it gives them easier matchups, more offensive starts, and really plays to their strengths. So if it were me, that third center doesn't even necessarily have to be a third line center because it kind of depends on how you number them and how you look at those things.
Yeah.
But yeah, Zeri's the guy for me.
Well, and the only other thing you lose with Zeri, and listen, you're going to lose something, as I said, any which way. You know, the other thing you risk if you move Zeri to center is that he and Nazem Kadri have your best chemistry as an offensive duo. But I would lean to Pospisil first. I would lean to Zeri second and then Yegor Sharangovich just because I think that shot is such a weapon from the wing and because his face-off numbers were awful. Yegor Sharangovich would be my third choice.
I'm a big Sharangovich fan. I love that signing. I just do not see him as a center. I thought that we saw a lot of him at center this year, and that a lot of him at center proved to me that I don't think he is a poor center. I just don't think he's anywhere near as well served playing down the middle. And you take, as to your point, you take away way too much with what he brings you on the wing. And I just think he's too valuable. You have other options that you can have down the middle that would be as effective, if not more effective, than Sharangovich is at that spot.
He filled in admirably, but I think we saw that his best position is on the wing.
Yeah, and that's a fair way of putting it. Okay, this reads from Bill listening in Trail BC. Probably not in you or Wes's wheelhouse, but you two are what I'm stuck with. How does their prospect pool now compare league-wide? And as an extension, how does the Flames scouting department rate league-wise? Top 10, middle of the pack, slightly ahead of the Saskatchewan jockstraps. I appreciate what you guys do. Well, I'm sorry that you're stuck with us, Bill, but we'll try our best to answer this question. So before the draft, ESPN did a ranking and had the Flames right middle of the pack when it comes to their prospect pool. That was before the draft, but includes the Brustevich trade. Oh, no, the Brustevich trade was not a part of this, I don't believe. Yes, it was. It was done in April. So Brustevich is part of it.
Yeah.
Also in that mix would be Hanzek, Moran, a few of the other, Coronado, Wolf would be in that mix. You add in the 10 players they drafted now, especially the two first-round picks, and then some of those value picks that prospects people are in love with, the Andrew Bache selection, the Luke Muse selection, the Henry Muse selection, rather, the Luke Misa pick. Like, those are all three value picks right there that prospects, people were like, holy cow, the Flames nailed those ones. You throw all those into the mix, I bet you the Flames probably rank now among a lot of people in the top 10 when it comes to their prospect pool. Do they have that high-end guy? Yeah, maybe they do now, because for the first time, I feel like maybe they've got their franchise piece on defense, and his name, of course, is Zane Parekh. So
yeah, and I
think they've risen considerably in that regard.
And I am always, you know, so cautious about what I see on the ice at development camp, because it's a really tough time to evaluate prospects.
For sure.
Some of them haven't been on the ice for 2 months.
Look,
some
I thought,
of them were drafted
I came out
5
of one,
days ago.
I came out of one prospects camp or development camp thinking Marcus Granlund was going to be a 40-goal scorer in the NHL.
Yeah.
So that's not a knock on Marcus, but like
you can get overexcited about prospects, and you can also get over
pessimistic.
Yeah, over pessimistic, but the glimpses of the skill that you see from Zane Parekh, like I watched him walk the blue line in some drills today, and you can see where the excitement comes from. And, you know, before you pulled up the ESPN ranking, that was what I was going to say was, I think for some people they've sort of nudged into the top 10 now. And, you know, the one thing I'll add is that's fairly impressive when you consider the prospects who have recently graduated from the list, right? Like Connor Zary is considered a full-time NHLer. While we didn't have Pospisil as a super prospect by any means, he's graduated from prospect list. So I think, you know, if the Flames are in the top third of the league, you know, if you're putting them in that category, that's a really good sign for the start of the overhaul they're trying to do here.
And then as for the scouting department, all of a sudden, and this is what I always try to caution people when they are criticizing or lauding a scouting department. You know, Todd Button's mandate is not, he doesn't make that mandate. Todd Button works with the current general manager and works under the criteria given to him by whoever his general manager is. Well, his general manager is Craig Conroy, and there wasn't a whole lot that was done differently last draft because Conroy had been on the job for about a month and a half prior to they got to the draft, so all the scouting had been done under Brad Treliving's criteria prior. Well, this is the first year that Craig Conroy, as GM, was able to put in place what their new criteria is and what they really prioritized when it came to what they were looking at. And Craig Conroy gave them hockey sense, skill, high-end skill. These are the things that Conroy's group and the new hockey ops staff said, this is what we really would like to prioritize when we're drafting players. And I think you saw the fruits of that labor at this draft, because there was one constant, take out the goaltender, of the 9 skaters they selected. What were the two constants? Hockey sense and a high level of skill. And whether it be from Hoskin in the OJHL, Gritton in the USHL, Parekh and Basha, so on and so forth, in the Canadian Hockey League, like these guys are all highly skilled players at their levels, and those are some of the things, and the way they think the game as well, things that are very, very high on the list of how scouts see them. And so I think Calgary scouting staff does the job that is given to them by their general manager, and I think in this instance did a pretty damn good job.
Well, they've done a, you know,
at least so far a week removed from the draft.
Yeah, and I just, you know, when you look at the bigger picture, it's important to remember, while frustrated as you might be in some instances, it's important to remember the guys who aren't playing in Calgary anymore, because the scouting staff has found some.
Adam Fox
is the one that jumps out. I mean, to get a Norris Trophy winner in the third round of a draft is incredible. No matter what comes next for Oliver Shillington, at 60th overall, and especially on the heels of getting Rasmus Anderson at number 53, like, there's some really nice value picks. Obviously, things have veered off course for Adam Ruzicka, but, you know, to get an NHL caliber guy in him, and then Pospisil in back-to-back fourth rounds, I do think, and I know Todd Button takes his lumps sometimes in this city, but I do think if you kind of look, there's been a lot of hits in the past decade and change. And, you know, yeah, they're not all here. Matthew Tkachuk lifted the Stanley Cup for the wrong team in Todd Button's eyes.
Well, the right team, the wrong right team. How's that?
Yeah, there you go. But, you know, all in all, I just look up and down the list, and there's been some really nice finds. So, you know, I think there are certainly some misses on that list, but in a lot of cases, I think Todd Button and his staff deserve a tip of the cap.
A couple of Dustin Wolf-themed questions. Ray in Okotoks says, what does Wolf's new contract look like? And then this one, no name on it, but says, Dustin Wolf is now the number six favorite to win the Calder Trophy. What will he have to do to beat out Celebrini and Michkov? Well, let's first of all look on the contract, because that is an interesting one when you start talking about what Dustin Wolf's contract might look like, just because we are talking about a guy. Of course, he was qualified just before free agency opened by the Flames. You know, that's a fair question, what that ends up looking like, just because as a guy with, you know, however many 15 NHL games or whatever it is under his belt, you don't know what he is 100% as of yet, but you also know what you project him to be and what you hope for him to be. I think a two-year deal into the seven figures probably could make sense at this point, knowing what he's projected to be on your roster here.
Yeah, I think that makes good sense as well. In some ways, you're paying for the potential of a guy who's been a two-time goalie of the year in the AHL, who's been an AHL MVP, and that puts you, you know, over a million. But I don't think a ton over a million. You know,
I was thinking like 2 years at 1.5 or something like that.
I think you could probably even get him for a little bit less than 1.5. To be honest with you, you know, we're talking about a guy with 16 NHL starts with NHL numbers that to date aren't going to totally blow you away. I could see, you know, more like 1.25, to be perfectly honest with you. The one number, and I don't think it's something a lot of people will pay attention to because it's not going to matter on the salary cap, but I think you're going to see Dustin Wolf's representation ask for a very large sum at the AHL level. I think they're going to want to make sure, unlike an entry-level deal where you're down in the minors and you're making a fraction of what you are at the NHL level, I think you're going to see Dustin Wolf push for a really substantial chunk of change as further incentive.
Do you think that he did, like, and not to cut you off, but do you even go two-way with him? Well, he might be a guy like you might be able to get him at that number if you keep him on a one-way deal, like a two years at $1 million, but both one way.
Right.
And that way, you know what he's making in the American League is exactly the same in the NHL.
Yeah, I mean, the two-way, I suppose, protects you in the sense that he does have another year where he doesn't have to clear waivers. But yeah, your way around it would make even more sense for Dustin and his camp. You expect us to be in the NHL? Well, give us a one-way deal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
As for him winning the Calder Trophy, he'd probably need to start like 50 games and be really good in those 50 games.
And win a lot of them.
Win a lot of them.
Yeah.
I think that six is fine. That's a good handicap. I don't know if I would put it a whole lot more than sixth. I think Celebrini is your one, makes a lot of sense. Michkov coming over makes a lot of sense. But yeah, I don't know if I see Dustin
Lane
Wolf.
Hudson might put his name in that.
Hudson could be right
in
there.
That hat. I'm just trying to look up because Kochkov, and I always pronounce it wrong.
Kochetkov. Yep.
In Carolina was Calder eligible this year and won 23 games and had a 233 goals against average and 911 save percentage and was not a finalist. So that probably gives you an indication of how hard it is, especially if Celebrini turns pro and puts up the sort of numbers we might expect. If some of these other young guys like Lane Hudson or Matvei Michkov have the immediate impact that we're thinking they could have, I think it's going to be really tough for a goalie to get on that ballot.
A few more at 960-960 when it comes to our Flames Talk mailbag. This says, I would imagine the locker room would be pretty uncomfortable for Shillington. Now, I don't think that would be the case.
No, I actually don't think so.
These guys are all businessmen, and they understand. The same way it wasn't, I mean, the Zadorov situation became uncomfortable because it went public as a move by the agent to go public, and he had said some things in the media that didn't sit very well inside that room. That's why it maybe got a little uncomfortable in the Zadorov situation. But it never got uncomfortable for Sam Bennett when that trade request got out there.
Yeah.
It never got uncomfortable for Noah Hanifin or Elias Lindholm or as they were working through their uncertain futures last year. Everybody understands the game. There was no discomfort for Johnny Gaudreau when he was putting up 115 points and an expiring contract. If Oliver Shillington signs back with the Calgary Flames, he'll be, I fully believe he'll be embraced by that locker room, because they all understand, especially in 2024, this is a business.
Yeah.
And they understand that they can be traded at the snap of a finger, and in a lot of cases have no recourse.
Sure.
They understand.
Look what just happened to Andrew Mangiapane, a guy who...
Well, and look what happened. You know, Mangiapane's a great example. Look what happened to him in the first couple contract negotiations for him.
Yeah.
Where Brad Treliving, and this is not a criticism on Tree at all.
No, but Brad, they were haggling over breadcrumbs.
And which is very, very fitting for the guy. but Tree used every single ounce of leverage he had because he could. And GMs and teams do that because they can. So no player, I don't think any player begrudges another player for trying to use their leverage. And if it doesn't work, that doesn't mean that there's going to be any sour grapes if they end up coming back. I don't worry about that, honestly, in the slightest.
No, I think that there's a lot of understanding in that room that Oliver Shillington's looking for the sort of security that a longer term on a contract would give him. And I don't think that other guys who understand what it means to be Rasmus Anderson Inc. or Mackenzie Weegar Inc. or Jonathan Huberdeau Inc., I think those guys understand that when you get these opportunities, you have to try to take advantage of them.
Yep.
Now, you know, if Oliver Shillington had come out publicly this week and said, yeah, geez, I'd really like to play somewhere else, so I hope I get an offer. And then he wound up back in Calgary. Different story.
Yeah.
But I think just looking for more loot or more term or a combination of the two, I don't think that's going to sour his current teammates on him. In fact, starting with the captain, Michael Backlund, I mentioned Rasmus Anderson. Like, there's a lot of guys that I would actually go the other way with and say, you know what? I think there's a good chance that they're hoping Oliver Shillington is back.
A couple more quick ones. This says Conroy should have targeted Matt Savoie. Seems like a low price for a player that would fit in the Flames' plan. Of course, Matthew Savoie was traded on Friday to the Edmonton Oilers. He's an Edmonton kid, St. Albert guy, and he got moved from the Buffalo Sabres organization to the Oilers today in the deal that sent Ryan McLeod to the Buffalo Sabres. McLeod, who had some decent stretches with the Oilers as part of their run to the Stanley Cup final. Oilers with some, you know, they need to give themselves some cap flexibility. They also have Draisaitl and McDavid down the middle for what they believe is going to be the very foreseeable future.
Sure.
And so going out and getting a younger guy like Savoie, who looks like he could project to be a nice center iceman going forward, I actually like that piece of business for the Edmonton Oilers. I do. I don't know if Savoie was going to be in the mix necessarily for the Flames, however. Like, Buffalo really wanted McLeod.
I was going to say, the question comes in and says, why didn't Craig Conroy target Matt Savoie? And my guess from the outside on this one is that this was a case of Buffalo targeting Ryan McLeod.
Yep.
Targeting the speed, targeting a guy who they think maybe is capable of a larger offensive role than he was ever going to get behind two superstars in Edmonton. That's the way I read this trade, is this wasn't about Buffalo saying, send us your best offers for Savoie. this was, hey, what's it going to take to get Ryan McLeod?
And the final one comes from James in Calgary, who says, is the new video scoreboard going in the new arena? Let me just edit that text. Is the new Sportsnet scoreboard going in the new arena? I figured I should, you know. Can we, what station like, we're in.
Can we play one of those cash register sounds or something?
Well, they do pay a couple of us on this program right now. Yes, the new scoreboard is going in the new building. I know there's a lot of questions about that when the Flames announced their new scoreboard. So the Sportsnet scoreboard is replacing the existing NMAX Energy board. And that thing, let's be honest, that thing's 15 years old and is not HD. And so it's 2024. The Flames are opening a new building in the fall of 2027. It will have a brand new state-of-the-art video board, but this is kind of a it's a transitional video board.
So I think you might have
3 more years.
I think you might have misspoke at the start. You said it is going to the new
building. Oh, sorry. I thought
it's not.
So let me say that again. Is the new video scoreboard going in the new arena? I thought it meant going in the Saddledome.
It's the Sportsnet scoreboard.
The Sportsnet scoreboard is going in the old arena named the Saddledome and will not go in the new arena.
Yes.
Sorry, I misunderstood the text. This is a transitional piece of equipment that will be in the Saddledome until it closes. And then when the new building opens, thank you for catching me on that. When the new building opens, there will be a brand new scoreboard in there as well.
A lot of excitement about the Sportsnet scoreboard, which is almost four times bigger than the certainly dated model that has been hanging over center ice at the Saddledome, but no, it'll be a completely new, customized for the new building, state-of-the-art, you can be assured, scoreboard that will be in the new rink. As you said, this one is to get through the transition period.
And good, because
it's hard to see those replays.
You still need to give your fans a good product.
You and I do not have 2020 vision, so we need the high def.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah.
Good stuff on the Flames Talk mailbag. Really appreciate all the texts, and we'll do it again this summer. Pat and Wes, as we start to wrap up this hour, thanks to Cam and Zach back at Sportsnet 960 World Control, and that'll wrap us up. They're coming at you. Everything's coming at you back at the Groundworks Downtown Studio, your local experts for foundation and crawl space repair.